talk to you about rest and Sabbath and work today. And I've noticed this for a while, and probably I would guess that you have too. Most folks I talk to have noticed this trend that people are busy. And if you ask somebody how they are, about half the time, instead of saying, I'm great, I'm good, I'm okay, I'm terrible, you would say, busy. How are you? I'm busy. That's how I am. I'm busy. It's who I've become. I'm busy. And I hear it on all ages of people, from kids, usually teens, youth age, up to adults, even seniors. I'm busy. I know a couple of folks who've retired from work and are busier than they've ever been. Right? I see a nodding head there. And I talked to one gentleman about that, and he said, you know, I don't know how I ever had time to go to the office. I am doing so much stuff, and it's all good stuff, but I am busier now than I was back when I was working full-time and raising kids. I don't know how I did it. I hear it when I call on behalf of Gift Discernment for the congregation that I attend. Oh, I'd love to do that, but I'm too busy. I can't do that now. I'm too busy. Maybe another season. I hear it when I try to make appointments with clients and we go back and forth and try to find a date in our schedule that we can actually get together and have some conversation. I try to call pastors and they will lament their schedule when I try to find time for us to have coffee or lunch together. We are busy people. There's a longing for time and for space, I find, for people. There's a longing for the world to stop or pause just for a moment or two so we can catch our breath. I hear sadness at being so busy, a lament that this is what life has become, and a longing for something different. So a while ago, earlier this fall, I received an unexpected but very welcome gift. It was a September Monday, my only day off, prior to a couple weeks of travel. I'd carefully planned to finish all my chores and errands in the morning and was going to spend the afternoon helping my mom with a few things. When I called Mom around noon to make arrangements for the afternoon, I found out she just wasn't feeling quite 100% and wanted to postpone. Well, there was nothing we had to do that day. It was simply a convenient day. So I said, sure, absolutely, we can do all this stuff another time. And when I hung up the phone, I realized I had a whole afternoon of bonus time. Rob was at work. I had done all my chores and errands that morning, and I had a whole afternoon stretched out in front of me with absolutely nothing that I was required to do. Not one thing. No chores, no tasks, no errands. There were lots of things I could do, of course, but I was sitting at the kitchen table just relishing this sense that I had nothing I had to do. And trying to recall the last time that that had happened, and thought, well, it's been a long time. So I grabbed a cup of tea and a book that I had hoped to read for a while, and I sat on my front porch swing. It was a beautiful day outside. The birds were singing. Neighbors were walking by. It's September. Eventually, the kids wandered home from school. We have a public school up the street from us. I listened. I said hello to some neighbors. I watched the birds at the feeder, and I just soaked in this feeling of having nothing that I was required to do. And it was glorious. Now, by the time Rob arrived home from work, I was fully relaxed and peaceful and thinking, why don't I do this more often? Well, of course, the answer is, I don't think I have the time. Now, that book that I'd been wanting to find time to read, well, it was on spiritual discipline, specifically on Sabbath rest. God has a great sense of humor. So, as Ernest said, we're here, we're welcome. Come and sit, come and rest. Take a deep breath and let it out slowly. For some that I talk to, this is their only time of rest. This is the only time that they are mostly silent, that they can actually not focus on to-do lists or things that have to be done, obligations to meet, but simply sit and be. I also know some folks that use sermon time to make grocery lists, so, you know, whatever you choose. Now, I grew up on a dairy farm, and so every day, twice a day, we had to feed and milk the cows, and there was always other stuff to do as well. There were fields to plant or harvest, manure to deal with, things to fix or build, things to clean or paint, snow to move, silo unloaders to unthaw, potholes to fill, pretty much a never-ending cycle. When you were done, Well, the reality was you were never really done on a farm. There were always things to do. You simply had to decide that you had done enough and that this was the time when you were going to stop. But Sundays in our house were different. We still had to milk and feed the cows, of course, but most other farm work and housework was set aside. On Sundays, we did what we had to do around the farm, but nothing else. The broken equipment sat in the shop until Monday. The manure would sit in the spreader. The hay would stay in the field. Sunday was a Sabbath in our house. Now, way back when I grew up, some of you will remember this, Sunday was actually a forced Sabbath in Ontario. The Lord's Day Act prohibited most stores from opening on Sunday. Just try to imagine that, you girls. Tourist destinations, some restaurant and gas stations would be open, but eventually, but actually that was about it. There was no mall, department stores, that kind of stuff. They were simply closed. If you ran out of bread or milk, your best bet was probably a convenience store. Otherwise, you were just out of luck unless you went over to a neighbor's house. Now, in the 90s, that started to change, and eventually the law was repealed, and Sunday became like every other day as far as the world was concerned. And I think that's when we all lost something precious without realizing it. Most of us are not very good at doing nothing. We might like to sit and watch TV and not be productive, but we're often not doing nothing. We're kind of sitting there and maybe we're reading a book or a paper. We've got our phone out and we're checking stuff or a tablet. We tend to do things. Most of us have learned to multitask and do a few things at the same time, of course. To-do lists are long, time is short. Some of it would have to do with work ethic, with how we were raised. Working hard, getting ahead, accomplishing something, those tended to be applauded. While sitting around, daydreaming, being slothful or even lazy, those were to be avoided. They were a waste of time. Now, there's a medical doctor called Dr. Richard Swenson who had seen the results of his patients living at the edge of this near-constant state of stress. And he wrote this fantastic book called Margin. These patients living on the edge had no extra. That's what he noted. There's nothing to spare. There was no margin. Margin, of course, is the white space around the edge of paper. It's that gap, that space that allows us to look at things. It's that space that allows us to arrive 5 minutes early to an appointment and be there ahead of the time required. That would be margin. Now, these patients living on the edge have no extra. There's nothing to spare. There's no margin in their life. The slightest ripple was enough to drown them. A brief illness, an unexpected repair bill, a last-minute event added into the crammed calendar, or even just a five-minute traffic delay could throw their whole life into chaos. Just-in-time works for factory deliveries, but not recommended as a lifestyle choice. Really not. Margin is that space between the load we bear and the limits that we have. It's related to reserves and resilience. It's a buffer, a leeway, a gap, that place we can go to recharge our batteries and to focus on the things that matter most. Margin restores what our culture has taken away. Time to listen, strength to care, space to love, and the ability to hear God. Now, in this book, Dr. Swenson identifies four places that we need margin: emotional, physical, time, and financial. These four areas all interconnect, of course, and work to support each other, or it can all come down together a bit like a house of cards does. If we have emotional margin, we're resilient. We can bend, we can adapt, we can deal with whatever life tosses our way, be it good or bad. We can see silver linings, perhaps, and we can ask for help and support when we need it. If we don't have emotional margin, life feels like punishment. Everyone and everything is out to get us. Life is gray or black, and it feels like there is no hope, and we may struggle to remember the things that used to make us happy. If we have physical margin, we have energy, we have strength, and we can handle the things that daily demands that are placed on us. We can eat well, we exercise, we sleep, and we play. If we don't have physical margin, we are tired and sore and sick. We drag ourselves wherever we need to be, but we don't feel well, and we can barely make our bodies get through the day. If we have time margin, we can handle that five-minute traffic delay, or even an hour, without our day falling entirely to pieces. It might be tough, but the whole thing doesn't collapse. We can arrive early, where we're last, we have time to be prepared. If we don't have time margin, we are nearly always late. A last-minute request or a surprise, even a good one, can bring panic. We feel harried, rushed, and stressed. We can barely finish things, and we don't have time to do them well or to enjoy them. If we have financial margin, we can handle surprise expenses and fluctuations in income. We can weigh our options and make reasoned decisions without panic. If we don't have financial margin, we can quickly feel trapped. There's barely enough for today, never mind thinking about tomorrow or planning for future needs. We may feel stuck in a job because we can't afford to explore other options. Other areas of life and family can suffer if we spend all of our good hours at work. Downturns in our sector or the economy gives us indigestion. Recessions cause panic. We misunderstand stewardship when we believe it means that we can't rest and enjoy life. We are wrapped up in how needed and necessary we are. Like the mythical Dutch boy with his finger in the dike, we fear catastrophe if we stop or even pause. Seth Godin is an American entrepreneur, author, and public speaker. The following is one of his reflections. Before, when your shift at work was done, you were finished. Now there is always one more. One more email, one more phone call, one more comment, one more. Always the opportunity for one more. If you want to, you could never be finished. Facing a sea of infinity, it is easy to despair, sure that you will never be able to say, I'm done. We were trained to finish our homework, our P's, and our chores. Today, we are never finished, and that's okay. We need to learn that that's okay. For some of us, we are unable to find adequate rest because we are under the constant impression that our lives can and should be better than they are. This constant drive to improve our standing through the acquisition of money, power, or skills can rob us of contentment and joy. For others, we don't really want to rest. The silence, the lack of distraction are kind of uncomfortable. Being busy may keep us from feeling lonely. It can distract us from emotions that we may not want to confront or deal with. Being busy can keep our fears at bay. Being busy gives us a socially acceptable reason to avoid discomfort. God's commandment says, no working on the Sabbath. Keep it holy, just as God, your God, commanded you. Work 6 days doing everything you have to do, but the seventh day is a Sabbath, a rest day. No work, not for you, your son, your daughter, your servant, your maid, your ox, your donkey, or any of your animals, and not even the foreigner that's visiting your town. That way, your servants and your maids will get the same rest as you. Don't ever forget that you were slaves in Egypt, and God, your God, got you out of there with a powerful show of strength. That's why God, your God, commands you to observe the day of Sabbath rest. Now, the Ten Commandments are found in both Exodus and Deuteronomy, and in both places, we have them listed as commands, not suggestions, not recommendations, not guidelines. In between the first three, which guide our relationship to God, and the last six, which guide our relationships with each other, is the fourth commandment, instructing us to rest, to cease work, and to remember. And if you look at all Ten Commandments, the fourth commandment, the one on Sabbath, is the most detailed and contains the most words. At least in English it does. It's almost as though God knew that this might be a struggle for us, that we might say something like, 9 out of 10 ain't bad, right? It's a struggle for us. And in Egypt, there were no limits on work and little time to rest. But God is not a Pharaoh. God does not keep requiring more with less. On the contrary, God rests. God rests, confident, secure, and at peace. Walter Brueggemann is an Old Testament professor in the U.S., and he has this to say. Sabbath, according to him, is not totally about worship. It is about work stoppage. It is about withdrawal from the anxiety system that Pharaoh created, the refusal to let one's life be defined by production and consumption, and the endless pursuit of private well-being in our culture. Is it possible that our culture is the new Egypt, that that's where we live, a place of slavery and endless work without the opportunity for rest? The market in this analogy, of course, is the new Pharaoh, never satisfied, always striving for more, and often working for more with less. The Exodus story is where God liberates Israel from Pharaoh's regime of constant work. In the wilderness journey that followed, there was no storing up, simply gathering enough for the day, and then resting on the seventh, trusting that God had provided enough. It's a clear rejection of Pharaoh's system. It's a willingness to let the land rest, let the animals rest, and to let all of the workers rest. Sabbath is a day to remember Pharaoh and to celebrate freedom from that old system of slavery. Maybe, just maybe, God knew that we humans need and knew what we need and knew that we'd be tempted to do more and more and not stop and rest. That we needed more than just permission to rest. That we needed a reminder, a rule, a commandment even, so that we will stop work and rest. A reminder of the importance of stepping out of production mode and into the pure joy of simply resting in God. Matthew 11:27-30 says, "Are you tired, worn out? Come to me. Come get away with me, and you'll recover your life. I'll show you how to take a real rest. Walk with me and work with me," Jesus says. "Watch how I do it. Learn the unforced rhythms of grace. I won't lay anything heavy or ill-fitting on you. Keep company with me, and you'll learn to live lightly and freely." It's from The Message. Isn't that what we want? Wouldn't we love to just recover our lives? To learn those unforced rhythms of grace. I love that phrase. We need to find the time and the space to recover our lives, to regain our souls, to truly rest and to live lightly and freely. It's like a cold drink of water on a hot day. Or a warm drink on a cold day maybe would be more appropriate today. What if we approach the Sabbath as a reprieve, an escape from the things you ought to be doing or should have done, a day of hooky, a get-out-of-jail-free card?
Snow day.
A snow day, exactly. Sabbath is an ought-free zone. It's the one day when the only thing you must do is not do the things that you must. I'm going to repeat that. It's the one day when the only thing that you must do is to not do the things that you must. You are commanded to ignore all of the oughts and the shoulds. You are commanded to set aside that to-do list and instead do the things that get put off and pushed away. You get to ignore the have-tos and grab hold of the get-tos. Set aside the things that wear you out so you have time for the things that restore you. Stop doing the things you don't want to and start doing the things that you do. So, can I do laundry on Sunday? Well, is it necessary? Is it something I have to do? Is it something that's an obligation? Then no, I won't. It sounds like an ought. But if I do laundry for the sheer pleasure of it, if watching stains disappear makes me smile, and I truly enjoy folding warm sheets fresh from the clothesline or the dryer, I have a sister for whom this is true. It's not me. If I get deep satisfaction and joy, if clean laundry restores my soul, and it feels like the opposite of work, then yes, I could do laundry. See the difference? Jesus, in the Matthew passage, got deep pleasure out of healing people, out of restoring them to wholeness, bringing them closer to him. In the Pharisees' eyes, that was work. They were following the rules. Healing, medical care, that kind of stuff, that's work. You cannot do that on the Sabbath. It is not appropriate or acceptable. And Jesus said, no way, that's not okay. This is actually taking someone who has a piece that is broken, that needs to be healed. That's not work. That's pleasure for me. That's something I love to do. I get deep satisfaction out of this, and I will do this on the Sabbath, and it's okay. Sabbath rules are to cease from that which is necessary, to do no work. We need to know what not to do, what to avoid. But we also need to remember what to pursue. What are the things that we need to do? What are the things we need to embrace, the things that give us life? Well, how about spending some time producing nothing but laughter and memories? What are the things that give you joy? What bring you pleasure and happiness? What allows you to see and to hear God? For some, it may be a nap, a cup of tea, or a hike. For others, it might be a board game, perhaps playing in the snow, a campfire maybe. For me, it was sitting on my front porch swing, knowing that there was nothing pressing, nothing that had to be done, nothing that was demanding my time and attention. No shoulds, no oughts, just a few hours of time. And it was glorious. More importantly, this time of rest can help us remember that our relationship with God is a two-way street. God listens to us if we stop long enough to check in. But we also need to pause and give time to listen, to stop and be still, to hear that quiet voice of God speaking to us. For many that I talk to, church is one of the only places where they feel like they have that space and time and permission to simply sit and listen for God. Enough is an elusive place for many of us. It's not something that's clearly measured. And it's hard in our North American worldview to step back and say, we have enough. The ability to stop and rest is an extension of our contentment and security. We grown-up people forget how to play, or even that it's valuable and important. We forget. We are called to honor God, to be in relationship together, to care for each other, to have time to listen and space to love. We need rest, so much so, in fact, that it is commanded. We need to remember to play, to enjoy, to laugh, and to listen for the voice of God. Purposefully, intentionally, build some margin into your lives. Take back your time, your emotional resilience, your physical health, and your financial well-being. Build space to listen, to care, and to love. Keep company with God, and you'll learn to live freely and lightly. Rediscover the God that created us to work, but also to play and to rest, and discover that blessing of rest.